Chapter 12. From Iquitos to Pivas, on the 6th of June, the very next day, Joam Garral and his people bade goodbye to the superintendent, and the Indians and Negroes who were to stay behind at the fazenda. At 6 o'clock in the morning the jangada received all its passengers, or rather inhabitants, and each of them took possession of his cabin, or perhaps we had better say his house. The moment of departure had come. Araujo, the pilot, got into his place at the bow, and the crew, armed with their long poles, went to their proper quarters. Joam Garral, assisted by Benito and Manuel, superintended the unmooring. At the command of the pilot the ropes were eased off, and the poles applied to the bank so as to give the jangada a start. The current was not long in seizing it, and coasting the left bank, the islands of Iquitos and Perianta were passed on the right. The voyage had commenced. Where would it finish? In Para, at Belem, 800 leagues from this little Peruvian village, if nothing happened to modify the route. How would it finish? That was the secret of the future. The weather was magnificent. A pleasant ampero tempered the ardor of the sun, one of those winds which in June or July come from off the Cordilleras, many hundred leagues away, after having swept across the huge plain of the Sacramento. Had the raft been provided with masts and sails she would have felt the effects of the breeze, and her speed would have been greater. But owing to the sinuosities of the river and its abrupt changes, which they were bound to follow, they had to renounce such assistance. In a flat district like that through which the Amazon flows, which is almost a boundless plain, the gradient of the riverbed is scarcely perceptible. It has been calculated that between Tabatinga on the Brazilian frontier and the source of this huge body of water, the difference of level does not exceed a decimeter in each league. There is no other river in the world whose inclination is so slight. It follows from this that the average speed of the current cannot be estimated at more than 2 leagues in 24 hours, and sometimes, while the droughts are on, it is even less. However, during the period of the floods it has been known to increase to between 30 and 40 kilometers. Happily, it was under these latter conditions that the jangada was to proceed, but, cumbrous in its movements, it could not keep up to the speed of the current which ran past it. There are also to be taken into account the stoppages occasioned by the bends in the river, the numerous islands which had to be rounded, the shoals which had to be avoided, and the hours of halting, which were necessarily lost, when the night was too dark to advance securely, so that we cannot allow more than 25 kilometers for each 24 hours. In addition, the surface of the water is far from being completely clear. Trees still green, vegetable remains, islets of plants constantly torn from the banks, formed quite a flotilla of fragments carried on by the currents, and were so many obstacles to speedy navigation. The mouth of the Nanay was soon passed, and lost to sight behind a point on the left bank, which, with its carpet of russet grasses tinted by the sun, formed a ruddy relief to the green forests on the horizon. The jangada took the center of the stream between the numerous picturesque islands, of which there are a dozen between Iquitos and Pucallpa. Araujo, who did not forget to clear his vision and his memory by an occasional application to his demijohn, maneuvered very ably when passing through this archipelago. At his word of command 50 poles from each side of the raft were raised in the air and struck the water with an automatic movement very curious to behold. While this was going on, Iquita, aided by Lena and Cybele, was getting everything in order, and the Indian cooks were preparing the breakfast. As for the two young fellows and Minta, they were walking up and down in company with Padre Pasanta, and from time to time the lady stopped and watered the plants which were placed about the base of the dwelling house. "Well, Padre," said Benito, "do you know a more agreeable way of traveling?" "No, my dear boy," replied the Padre, "it is truly traveling with all one's belongings." "And without any fatigue," added Manuel. "We might do hundreds of thousands of miles in this way." And, said Minha, you do not repent having taken passage with us? Does it not seem to you as if we were afloat on an island drifted quietly away from the bed of the river with its prairies and its trees? Only, repeated the padre. Only we have made the island with our own hands. It belongs to us, and I prefer it to all the islands of the Amazon. I have a right to be proud of it. Yes, my daughter, and I absolve you from your pride. Besides, I am not allowed to scold you in the presence of Manuel. But, on the other hand, replied she, gaily, you should teach Manuel to scold me when I deserve it. He is a great deal too indulgent to my little self. Well then, dear Minha, said Manuel, I shall profit by that permission to remind you of what? That you were very busy in the library at the fazenda, and that you promised to make me very learned about everything connected with the Upper Amazon. We know very little about it in Para, and here we have been passing several islands and you have not even told me their names. What is the good of that? Said she. Yes, what is the good of it? Repeated Benito. What can be the use of remembering the hundreds of names in the Tupi dialect with which these islands are dressed out? It is enough to know them. The Americans are much more practical with their Mississippi islands. They number then, as they number the avenues and streets of their towns, replied Manuel. Frankly, I don't care much for that numerical system. It conveys nothing to the imagination. 64th Island or 65th Island, any more than 6th Street or 3rd Avenue. Don't you agree with me, Minha? Yes, Manuel, though I am of somewhat the same way of thinking as my brother. But even if we do not know their names, the islands of our great river are truly splendid. See how they rest under the shadows of those gigantic palm trees with their drooping leaves, and the girdle of reeds which encircles them, through which a pirogue can with difficulty make its way, and the mangrove trees, whose fantastic roots buttress them to the bank like the claws of some gigantic crab. Yes, the islands are beautiful, but, beautiful as they are, they cannot equal the one we have made our own. My little Minha is enthusiastic today, said the padre. Ah, padre, I am so happy to see everybody happy around them. At this moment the voice of Yaquita was heard calling Minha into the house. The young girl smilingly ran off. You will have an amiable companion, said the padre. All the joy of the house goes away with you, my friend. Brave little sister, said Benito, we shall miss her greatly, and the padre is right. However, if you do not marry her, Manuel, there is still time, she will stay with us. She will stay with you, Benito, replied Manuel. Believe me, I have a presentiment that we shall all be reunited. The first day passed capitally. Breakfast, dinner, siesta, walks, all took place as if Joam Garral and his people were still in the comfortable fazenda of Iquitos. During these 24 hours the mouths of the rivers Bacali, Chachio, Pucallpa, on the left of the stream, and those of the rivers Itinicari, Maniti, Moyoc, Tucaya, and the islands of this name on the right, were passed without accident. The night, lighted by the moon, allowed them to save a halt, and the giant raft glided peacefully on along the surface of the Amazon. On the morrow, the 7th of June, the jangada breasted the banks of the village of Pucallpa, named also New Oran. Old Oran, situated 15 leagues downstream on the same left bank of the river, is almost abandoned for the new settlement, whose population consists of Indians belonging to the Mayaruna and Origen tribes. Nothing can be more picturesque than this village with its ruddy colored banks, its unfinished church, its cottages, whose chimneys are hidden amid the palms, and its two or three yubas half stranded on the shore. During the whole of the 7th of June the jangada continued to follow the left bank of the river, passing several unknown tributaries of no importance. For a moment there was a chance of her grounding on the easterly shore of the island of Sinicure, but the pilot, well served by the crew, warded off the danger and remained in the flow of the stream. In the evening they arrived alongside a narrow island, called Napo Island, From the name of the river which here comes in from the north-northwest, and mingles its waters with those of the Amazon through a mouth about 800 yards across, after having watered the territories of the Kotu and Origin Indians. It was on the morning of the 7th of June that the Jangada was abreast the little island of Mango, which causes the Napo to split into two streams before falling into the Amazon. Several years later, a French traveler, Paul Marcoy, went out to examine the color of the waters of this tributary, which has been graphically compared to the cloudy greenish opal of absinthe. At the same time, he corrected some of the measurements of La Condamine. But then the mouth of the Napo was sensibly increased by the floods, and it was with a good deal of rapidity that its current, coming from the eastern slopes of Cotopaxi, hurried fiercely to mingle itself with the tawny waters of the Amazon. A few Indians had wandered to the mouth of this river. They were robust in build, of tall stature, with shaggy hair, and had their noses pierced with a rod of palm, and the lobes of their ears lengthened to their shoulders by the weight of heavy rings of precious wood. Some women were with them. None of them showed any intention of coming on board. It is asserted that these natives are cannibals, but if that is true, and it is said of many of the riverine tribes, there must have been more evidence for the cannibalism than we get today. Some hours later, the village of Bella Vista, situated on a somewhat lower bank, appeared, with its cluster of magnificent trees, towering above a few huts roofed with straw, over which there drooped the large leaves of some medium-sized banana trees, like the waters overflowing from a taza. Then the pilot, so as to follow a better current, which turned off from the bank, directed the raft toward the right side of the river, which he had not yet approached. The maneuver was not accomplished without certain difficulties, which were successfully overcome after a good many resorts to the demijohn. This allowed them to notice in passing some of those numerous lagoons with black waters, which are distributed along the course of the Amazon, and which often have no communication with the river. One of these, bearing the name of the Lagoon of Oran, is of fair size, and receives the water by a large strait. In the middle of the stream are scattered several islands and two or three islets curiously grouped, and on the opposite bank Benito recognized the site of the ancient Oran, of which they could only see a few uncertain traces. During 2 days the Jangada traveled sometimes under the left bank, sometimes under the right, according to the condition of the current, without giving the least sign of grounding. The passengers had already become used to this new life. Joam Garral, leaving to his son everything that referred to the commercial side of the expedition, kept himself principally to his room, thinking, and writing. What he was writing about he told to nobody, not even Iaquita, and it seemed to have already assumed the importance of a veritable essay. Benito, all observation, chatted with the pilot and acted as manager. Iaquita, her daughter, and Manuel nearly always formed a group apart, discussing their future projects just as they had walked and done in the park of the fazenda. The life was, in fact, the same. Not quite, perhaps, to Benito, who had not yet found occasion to participate in the pleasures of the chase. If, however, the forests of Iquitos failed him with their wild beasts, agoutis, peccaries, and cabies, the birds flew in flocks from the banks of the river, and fearlessly perched on the jangada. When they were of such quality as to figure fairly on the table, Benito shot them, and, in the interest of all, his sister raised no objection. But if he came across any gray or yellow herons, or red or white ibises, which haunt the sides, he spared them through love for Minta. One single species of grebe, which is uneatable, found no grace in the eyes of the young merchant. This was the arara, as quick to dive as to swim or fly, a bird with a disagreeable cry, but whose down bears a high price in the different markets of the Amazonian basin. At length, after having passed the village of Amaguas and the mouth of the Ambiacu, the Jangada arrived at Pivas on the evening of the 11th of June, and was moored to the bank. As it was to remain here for some hours before nightfall, Benito disembarked, taking with him the ever-ready Fragoso, and the two sportsmen started off to beat the thickets in the environs of the little place. A Ngogai and a KBI, not to mention a dozen partridges, enriched the larder after this fortunate excursion. At Pivas, where there is a population of 260 inhabitants, Benito would perhaps have done some trade with the lay brothers of the mission, who are at the same time wholesale merchants, but these had just sent away some bales of sarsaparilla and arobas of caoutchouc toward the lower Amazon, and their stores were empty. The jangada departed at daybreak, and passed the little archipelago of the Iesho and Cochaquinas Islands, after having left the village of the latter name on the right. Several mouths of smaller unnamed affluents showed themselves on the right of the river through the spaces between the islands. Many natives, with shaved heads, tattooed cheeks and foreheads, carrying plates of metal in the lobes of their ears, noses, and lower lips, appeared for an instant on the shore. They were armed with arrows and blow tubes, but made no use of them, and did not even attempt to communicate with the jangada. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.